On the football field, the action happens in the blink of an eye. It's like that off the field too when you've been injured. In a split second, your life is changed. Whether on the field or in the courtroom, when you've been injured, you need the right teammates by your side. You need Chase and Boscolo, a law firm willing to protect and fight for your rights. On the football field or in the courtroom, having the right team determines whether you win or lose. When injuries change your life, call Chase and Boscolo, trial lawyers that care.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Fairfax Toyota. Let's ride together.
What up, everybody? JP Finley here. Another episode of Redskins Talk is happening right now. I am joined by local celebrity Mitch Tischler. Say hi, Mitch.
How's everyone going?
How's everyone going? Is that English?
It's one of those days.
How's it going? How's everyone doing? It all kind of runs together.
So Josh Norris preceded his introduction. We have NBC Sports draft expert Josh Norris joining us. Josh, say hello.
How's it going, everyone?
You don't want to follow my footsteps there?
He made it sound way better than whatever you said.
That's true.
I'm just offended I'm not a local celebrity.
Yeah, I tell you what, you go anywhere with Mitch, people know him, man. Allen knew you yesterday.
Really?
It's kind of a weird thing.
It's wow. Big Mitch, as he's called.
Spend enough time around one team, people get to know you.
You should get him to negotiate your contracts.
I should. I don't know who's all the contracts.
10 out of 10, you're re-signing, right?
We'll see. Let's set the scene real quick. We are back in Mitch's Hyundai Sonata rental car outside of Ladd People Stadium down here in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. I'm going to kind of let you run the ship, Josh, because you know, I'm watching practice. Mitch is watching practice. Uh-huh. But this is your livelihood. This is what you do, is watch these kids and project where they're going to land.
Yeah.
Who do you like this week?
I've been focusing as much as possible on the offensive line, defensive line matchups, the tackles versus the edge. I'm sure everyone has said this name, but again, it's worth repeating. It's Hassan Reddick, the linebacker.
The Temple kid?
Out of Temple. Let me talk to you about his story a little bit. He was a walk-on cornerback. Then turned linebacker, then turned edge rusher, then turned back to linebacker. I actually spoke with him earlier in the week because, you know, a lot of these linebackers, and I'm sure you see it with the Redskins, they have difficulty bending, right? Once they get to the pocket depth, then they kind of just run around the pocket and can't turn the corner. Reddick is one of the few that were, I thought, kind of blessed naturally with that bend, but I asked him about it. He actually attributed it to yoga.
Oh, wow.
And wants to get that more involved in his system and his routine and everything like that. But Reddick is someone who has all that athleticism that you're looking for, but he doesn't overrun plays. You see that a lot with these guys that are naturally athletic at the linebacker position, that they want to get to a point before a lane actually opens. But he, man, and because of his corner background, he's comfortable in space. Again, this is someone who was a former walk-on, switched all these positions, and might not have a ton of production.
How the hell do you go from corner
right
to linebacker,
you know,
to
funny
edge rusher back to
and
corner?
How much weight did he have to put on right to, yeah, make that change?
What's funny is he actually played corner the same time at Temple that Robbie Anderson, the Jets wide receiver, played some corner there as well. Yeah, I mean, again, so this is someone who might not be, obviously.
Did his weight fluctuate?
Yeah, a little bit. But I just think it was a natural progression for him. Like, he's only, what, like 230 pounds here now. And again, I'm talking way too much about him, but I'll say one more thing. He might not be, like, your primary rusher, right? He might not be your primary linebacker. But I think a secondary option in all those areas, and I still think he's a top 50 pick, absolutely.
You know what's great about him, as we've been talking to different scouts around the Senior Bowl, is every guy was like, hoping that he didn't come play in this game because he was their quote-unquote sleeper.
Yeah.
And they kept saying, like, oh, man, now he's out there.
Right.
He had a nice rush around the edge earlier today.
Strip
the sack of the quarterback. The 11-on-11 strip sack of the quarterback.
Yep.
And that
Mitch
was kind
just
of an,
totally
kind of nice
stole
play.
What I was going to say, by the way.
It's you know what? And obviously those one-on-ones are made for the defensive players to win.
Yeah, dude, it's so hard for O-linemen in those drills. There's no threat of the run. There's no, like, protection scheme.
Right. And especially in those one-on-ones with offensive line, defensive line, only one person is dropping, right? And so you don't have to have gap integrity.
Right.
At all.
You have outside, right. inside, yeah.
You can move anywhere, and no one is there around you. It's just one-on-one. So it really does set up. And so that's when, like, when there's one really, really good block by the offensive lineman to stop someone's momentum or completely, you know, annihilate them on that play. Like, we've seen it with Taylor Moten, who's a Western Michigan offensive lineman, who's probably a right tackle, maybe a guard in the NFL, kind of a Coleccio simile comp.
Okay.
Or Antonio Garcia had one really
that's
good
rep. That's your guy,
against
right?
Jordan, yeah. Willis yesterday. And, like, and again, like, and Garcia hasn't had the week that I was expecting from him, right? But my expectations were probably higher than anyone else. And maybe he hasn't emerged as the number one tackle on the board that I think he could. But again,
you're saying number one overall tackle on
yeah,
the board?
Yeah, wow. I really think, well, because you have to look at, and again, I know we're going to talk about the Senior Bowl, but you have to look at the other tackles in this class and just briefly with them. You have someone like Cam Robinson who has faced some suspensions, right?
The big Bama kid?
Yep. You have Ryan Ramczyk, who's at Wisconsin, who just had hip surgery, who's about to have hip surgery. And then you have Garrett Bowles, who's out of Utah, who's like 24 years old or something like that, maybe 25. So there's questions around all those guys, right?
So you're saying Garcia could almost get it kind of default?
And because he's a true left tackle, there are all these guys that, well, maybe they have a right tackle, maybe they're a guard, blah, blah, blah. It's tough to find someone at that position with his footwork in terms of his pass set and his mobility. But also, man, he loves to finish. He's an aggressive finisher. He's gotten in a few fights here as well. By the way, the first day, some fists were thrown. That's more than I've ever seen here at this event. So,
really?
Just here today. It happened again with the Michigan running back, 44, kind of with some of the linebackers.
He has tiny little hands, so I'm not sure how that's going to work. They're like 8-inch hands. In fact, only two running backs in the last 5 years have had smaller hands than him that have been drafted.
Wow. Who are they? See how deep we're going here.
That's a kid, Devin Smith.
I believe one was DeAnthony Thomas. And maybe the other one was Dree Archer. I can't even remember who the other one was.
Anyways. Let's go.
Sorry about that. I failed you.
Real quick, going back to the tackle real quick. Hal, you know, we see O-linemen, especially left tackles, going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 the past few years.
Right.
But it kind of feels like this might be a little softer of a tackle class. How Definitely. High do you see these guys going?
I really haven't honestly dug into the junior class yet.
That's where the talent is, right?
Yeah, but I honestly, guys, I really do think Garcia has a chance to be the first one off the board just because with these tackle questions.
Yeah. Especially what happened with Laramie Tunsil last year is going to be in people's minds.
Yep.
That was like a movie, the way that unfolded during the draft.
And I'll say this, and a lot of people have said for years that the Panthers need to add tackles, they need to add tackles. They gave Michael Orr an extension last offseason, and I'm not going to speculate or anything, but I'll be very interested to see how that plays out this year because he obviously missed the second half of the season with a concussion. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if number 8 is an offensive tackle, and that could be the first one off the board.
That was a little just saying right there.
Just
I'm not saying.
A little speculation.
All right, let's drill down on some D-linemen. You love the kid Jahleel Jackson.
Johnson,
great job by me there.
I'll tell you this, he's from Iowa. He hasn't had a great 2 days,
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Why do you like him so much in your preview coming down here, and what do you think now?
I like him because I am biased towards defensive linemen who use their hands. To me, they're ahead of the game because, let's compare him versus someone like Montrevious Adams from Auburn, who some people like.
Who's big.
He's big.
He's a big dude. Yeah.
But to me, he is the type who, if his primary rush does not work, he has difficulty restarting his momentum. He has difficulty.
This is Adams you're talking about?
This is Adams who I'm talking about. Like, sometimes at the college level, that initial move works, but after that, he might fall to the ground, he might just get locked up, he might not move anywhere, and I want these defensive tackles that have counter moves, and the game kind of slows down for them, right, because they understand, hey, his balance has shifted this way. It's like wrestling in some ways, right? You know, you can take him down this way, you can move him in this direction. If I use this hands, if I just walk him back with my arm, things like that, and defensive tackles I loved in the past, Aaron Donald, Sheldon Rankin, so on and so forth, have that hand use. And Grady Jarrett is a great example. And so it sets them apart. And I thought Jahleel Johnson had the best hand use coming down here. But again, it hasn't been the last 2 days for him.
Have the hands not been there? Or has he just been getting beat by O-line?
You know what? He's not as explosive, well, nearly as explosive guys like Aaron Donald, but even in Sean Rankins, in my opinion. He's kind of, again, a slower first step, and then he's going off of that. I honestly can't give you because it's just one live.
Sure,
Until hopefully I can review it. But that counter's not working for him here.
Looking at some of those inside guys, at least over the first couple days, the kid from Notre Dame,
Isaac Rochelle,
looked good for what it's worth out here.
What's your take on the Domer?
Yeah, coming from a school that big and being here.
So he was asked to play outside of the guard and the tackle a bit too much for my liking at Notre Dame. And so when you move him inside, he might be that, you know, sub-package interior disruptor. I think Chris Wormley from Michigan can be the same thing. They asked him to play on the edge at Michigan a bit too often for my liking. And I think his best
pass rushing... That dude is too big to be on the edge.
Yeah, and he's like 300 pounds, almost
290. When we talked to him, wasn't he talking... I think when we interviewed him the other day, he talked about playing on the edge in a defensive end type spot.
But I think he was talking about a 3-4 DN.
Yeah, but he was even listed as a DN in this group here for this event.
Interesting.
So and so for me, and that happens a lot, right? We see guys that are asked to play on the edge, but then their best pass rushing success might be on the inside. And some teams like that, like we remember the Giants, right, when they go in the NASCAR package and they still do it. I mean, you especially used to see it with Justin Tuck and some of the other guys.
Yeah.
But again, it's a team-based thing. And so, yeah, if he goes to a team that maybe wants him to one gap or two gap or be odd man fronts or things like that, right, I think he could do his best work, let's just say, from outside the guard and not outside the tackle.
What about the Clemson kid, Watkins?
Don't like him.
No? Oh, jeez.
I don't like him. He doesn't do much for me. He doesn't move the needle.
He's a space eater? Is that kind of...
No, I mean, I kind of think he's a slower three technique that doesn't really do much, honestly.
Okay.
And, yeah, I mean, there are a few
I hope you're not listening, Carlos.
Well, and hey, I mean, I get things wrong a lot. And he can be good. Who knows, right?
Sure.
There are some
He's not, I mean, he's projected as a third-day draft guy anyway. Yeah. I mean, he's like a fourth, fifth rounder.
Here's one to keep in mind. Larry Ogunjobi from UNC Charlotte.
I had to look because I didn't know what helmet that was.
Yeah, UNC Charlotte.
Yeah.
They just started the football program like 4 years ago. He is kind of a smaller one or three tech, so again, outside the center, outside the guard, who can actually bend. And again, it's difficult to find defensive tackles that can bend, which is good because when they can, because once you get, you know, depth, and once someone gets off balance, you can work around them. It's all about the hips, honestly. It really is.
It's all about the hips.
Yeah, I've learned that as a later age.
JP's going to laugh at me, but... Day one, we talked about it a little bit, Josh, but the Terrell Basham kid from Ohio, I just kind of like his speed on the outside. He, even in the 11-on-11s, he was kind of blown by all of the offensive tackles that were here, and that might be more of a commentary on the guys that are here than it is how good he is, but he's the guy that that stuck out to me.
And he's a straight-line type to me who is at being asked to play a linebacker spot here, and to me he's more of a straightforward type who would do best primarily as an edge rusher and not someone who needs to be asked to cover these awesome tight ends that are out here.
Right.
Like, even in the NFL, and people get this all the time, and we were talking about this yesterday with the Redskins OLBs, the edge guys, right?
Yep.
That they were being asked, or some of them being asked to drop maybe too often. But and that's a big talking point whenever you go into draft season. To me, what you have to keep in mind with edge guys is 90% of the time they're just covering the curl of the flat. And that's about it. Like, that's nothing. But again, like, Basham, I'm not going to expect him to be a great athlete. I will throw this out there. I really like Derek Rivers from Youngstown State. Really, really like Derek
Rivers.
He's
been impressive in spots.
I think he's a top three edge rusher here.
Wow. So that's value because he's not going until at least Friday, right? I mean, he's a day two guy.
He's a day two guy. I think he's going to be a top 100 pick. And I'll tell you this. I've heard from just some hashtag sources that Tyrus Bowser, is that his name? The Houston edge rusher is going like top 100. And at Houston, he was asked to drop a little bit too much. He wasn't given a big enough opportunity, but he beat my boy Garcia bad yesterday. Bad in terms of got that depth. And then as soon as he got that depth, he was able to touch the ground and keep and turn the corner. And Garcia fell flat in his face because he's not used to, you know, wasn't expecting someone with that much bend, and he just missed his target. So someone that can bend like that no matter what is going to attract scouts. Plus, he's going to be a great athlete.
My guy I'm taking a shine to is Stevie T from USC.
Okay. He's 26 years old.
That's old for a draft prospect.
So,
I got it.
To me...
Now, was that... Did he do a mission trip or something?
He did a mission first and went to Utah, and then he was a graduate transfer at USC.
Okay,
So he's done everything, right?
Yeah, really.
Here's how I, and I think this is a bigger discussion, here's how I treat age with prospects, right? Because we see it every year. Even Cooper Kupp at wide receiver is like 23 or 24 years old, something like that.
That's the Eastern Washington kid?
Yeah. And I think this applies more to skill position players than it does anyone else. But you have to keep in mind that these guys are 26, 24 years old, facing 19, 20-year-olds.
Okay.
And just think about you and you
right.
when you were 26 and then versus when you were 20, 21 years old. Not just how physically developed you were, but mentally developed in comparison, right?
Yeah,
it was
totally.
Drastically different. So the size-wise, that might be the same. But mentally, I mean, you're in a different spot. You're in a different place, right? And I think that... If you check back and see how they were maybe in their earliest, like their age 21 season, their age 22 season, blah, 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 that might be more of a comparison than their last season versus these guys. Again, they're 19 and 20
years old. Yeah, no, so Terrence Knighton, Vince Wilfork comparable, and those guys play till they're 40. You know, Vince Wilfork is what, 45? I feel like he's been in the league forever.
I'll take the under on 45.
So will I, but my point being, he may be 26, but if he's a space eater in the middle,
yeah.
you. I mean, it's weird to say a D-lineman has longevity, but,
right.
you know, you can play a little bit longer if you can be that hole plugger.
My quick Vince Wilfork story.
I love Vince Wilfork stories.
He's the coolest dude I've ever seen. So I was up in Foxborough, Ravens-Pats 2014, I think. It was a pretty wild game, playoff game.
Was Lee Evans drop?
No. That was in Baltimore. This is after that. This was when, if you remember, the Ravens had a pretty big lead, like a 2-touchdown lead, and then Belichick and Brady broke out that like uneven line formation. And Brady was screaming about it. So I'm in the locker room after the game, talking to Wilfork, and it's freezing cold. It's Boston in January, whatever. And Wilfork just puts a t-shirt on, and I'm like, oh, you know, I recognize this guy as a big, bad dude, but it's cold, man. You need a coat. And then as he's leaving his locker, he pulls out the biggest fur coat I've ever seen in my life. So he just had jeans, a t-shirt, and a fur coat down onto his ankles. And it was just like the most badass look I'd ever seen on a guy. Anyway, that's my Vince Wilfork story.
How about any, like what positions would you say that the Redskins need most?
So there was another guy I wanted to ask you about.
Okay.
A corner.
Oh, you're not going to pronounce the name? Oh, I thought you were going Villanova kid.
Oh, that
trying,
kid.
Just trying to pronounce it.
Real quick, Rasul Douglas.
Oh, so, okay, it's interesting, because we talk about how teams...
He looks good.
How teams have types.
Yeah.
Like, they have minimums and measurables and all that kind of stuff that they want at certain positions. That's West Virginia now at corner, because last year they
are turning out secondary guys.
Daryl Worley, who has 32-plus inch arms at corner, and only about 10 to 15 of those in each draft class, and of Rasul Douglas was one of two here who has 32-plus inch arms. So again, some teams really like that. The Panthers are an example. I mean, Josh Norman had those.
Right. I mean, when I see a 6'2 corner,
right.
I'm like, I know Scott McLuhan loves that.
And what he's able to do is, and I think Breland might have had that too. I know that he wasn't a pick, but I think he might have had, anyways, I'm going on a tangent. Anyways, I'll say this about Douglas. He can anticipate the catch point and wants to go through them, and that's where the long arms help. And he's a super confident guy. I don't know if you guys speak to him.
Yeah, we talked to him, and that sounds right.
Yeah, super confident. And again, ball skills. And
but you know what's been tough watching him?
Yeah. He likes to grab, by the way.
These quarterbacks are so bad
horrible.
That when I see him making a play on the ball, I don't know if it's because the ball is so poorly thrown.
Yeah.
You know?
I haven't even felt the need to watch these quarterbacks. That's how
bad. I've seen more wounded ducks on, like, passing drills against nobody
right.
to a coach at the far hash than I've seen, you know, in a long time.
Dude, to me, and everybody talks about what are the problems the NFL is facing, it's a lack of quarterbacks, man. And college coaches are trying to win. High school coaches are trying to win. I get why you run the spread and why you run the read option. You put the ball in the best athlete on the field's hands. The NFL has a quarterbacking problem
are you
coming
saying,
their way.
You're saying that Brock Osweiler getting $37 million guaranteed is a problem?
Right, exactly.
How dare you?
I tell you what, and if we're going to make this local, which I guess we should, when you see the quarterbacks that are in this as seniors, it's hard not to think the Redskins should pay Kirk Cousins.
Right. We talked about it. It used to be like in Pee Wee football, you handed the ball to the best player and let him run around.
Right.
Well, now you have high school and colleges that are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And there's nobody being developed that can throw the ball.
I'll say this. We used to talk about quarterbacks needing to be paired with a top-tier wide receiver. I think more than ever, quarterbacks need to be paired with a talented and highly invested offensive line. And we're seeing that more and more with these young quarterbacks. And, hey, even Kirk as of late.
Because, totally.
Because
he plays behind a good O-line.
Yep, and they've been investing money and picks in them as well.
How about a fifth overall and a guard?
Yep, yep, absolutely. And, I mean, we've seen it with the Dallas Cowboys. We saw it with Carson Wentz when he played well. We saw it with Derek Carr and the Oakland Raiders spending a ton of money on their offensive line. I think, again, more and more often we're going to see offensive line with picks and money being invested to help quarterbacks rather than just wide receivers.
I think you saw it more than ever in Seattle this year.
Yep.
Had three-fifths of that offensive line went away, and all of a sudden Russ is no longer danger to Russ.
But don't worry, that head coach was being linked with head coaching, or that position coach is being linked with head coaching opportunities.
Cable, right, yeah.
Makes no sense to me.
What about any linebackers look good for you?
Redick, and that's about it, honestly.
Like, yeah.
The linebacker group, in my opinion, I've talked to some people here about it, is the worst group here.
Worse than the quarterbacks?
No, other than quarterbacks. I don't even factor in quarterbacks, but other than that, I don't really see anyone.
Is this a good draft class? Is this draft class in general?
I'll tell you this, man. A lot of people love it. A lot of people love it.
What positions are deep?
Well, the edge guys are deep, but a lot of them backed out and dropped out of here.
Okay.
It's the junior class. And apparently, honestly, I just haven't had time to go through the junior class because, and if I'm being transparent here, in the last 2 weeks leading up to these events, the Shrine and the Senior Bowl, I just was cooped up in my apartment watching about 200 prospects and catching up on those. So I haven't had a chance to look at
that. That sounds super exciting.
Other than the quarterbacks.
Your knowledge is the depth of your knowledge is pretty obvious. So I'm not knocking you for not having watched the juniors.
But watch, I'll be wrong half the time.
And also, I think a point to be made about
300 gets you in the Hall of Fame in baseball, right. Dude. Don't worry about it.
There you go.
I think a point to be made about the Senior Bowl also is that these are the seniors that aren't defined yet. The guys who are trying to impress coaches and agents and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, a lot of these guys are like undrafted free agents that they're hoping to line up a contract.
There's also a lot of CFL teams here.
Right.
I saw the Edmonton Eskimos.
Calgary Stampede.
Yeah. Like, I'll say this. I mean, hey, you go back to last week, and I was at the Shrine game last week. You look at that roster, and I thought the roster in 2016 was much better than the 2017 roster. But guys, that 20, like the Shrine game produces 30 players, 20 players each year as rookies that impact teams. Yeah. Like, hey, this is what we have to deal with. This is what we have.
These
are the guys that are going to get drafted, right? We just have to figure out where they are going to get drafted, obviously in what range.
So the Skins aren't going to draft him, but O.J. Howard is just a stud.
He's huge.
He's really good.
He's real good. And there is no projection needed for him, which I think in the NFL's eyes is awesome. Because they love that. They hate these projections where you're like, oh, he played from an air raid, so we have to ask if he's going to play in line, blah, blah, blah. O.J. Howard did it all. It might not have been featured as much as a receiver as teams wanted. But look, I mean, you even saw it yesterday when, like, Evan Engram caught a pass. O.J. Howard didn't hesitate, and looked for a knockout blow and a block and was right in position for it. And teams are going to love that.
What do you think of the A&M safety?
Justin Evans.
Yeah.
Love him. Justin Evans, I think we talked about this yesterday maybe, is someone who I really like. And look, again, I had to catch up in 2 weeks on about 200 prospects. So safeties are probably the worst ones to do that because you need to watch about 7 games to get a good feel of a safety rather than maybe 15 plays in another position. But what I love about him is he made it easy on me because if he's playing, you know, split safety, if he's playing free safety, single high, if he's playing strong closer to the box, he wants to meet someone at the line of scrimmage. Always, always, always. I'm not going to go as far as to say that he's similar to Carl Joseph from last year because I think Joseph was...
Another West Virginia guy.
Right, was more of a free safety type. But I know that some mentioned that maybe Joseph or Ryan Kelly was possibly the pick for Scott McLuhan last year before they both got taken before their selection.
I think it was Kelly, but yeah, right. I think they would have been happy with either one of those guys. That's
right.
Why they traded down.
Right, and people love Carl Joseph's aggression, let's put it that way. And I think that Justin Evans is almost as aggressive.
One thing that I'm kind of interested in, you talked about sitting down watching 200 prospects?
Yes.
What is the scene there?
Yeah, what's your setup? DVR look like?
What's your setup? Yeah. Are they computers, TVs?
No,
what are we doing?
I've got two monitors, and honestly, and again, I'm being super transparent here, but I've talked about this before. There are plenty of times where I only need about 15 reps to figure out who as a baseline you are. And that's what I'm looking for when I'm coming to these events, is a baseline idea of who you are. So like, let's take those edge rushers, for example, right, that we spent so much time on. If you don't offer anything explosive, if you don't offer anything that's unique, if you're kind of just a straight line type that wins with, let's say, a motor and not even very little technique, that you just run around your offensive lineman over and over again, then look, I know who you are. But guys that offer a little bit more, that are fluid athletes, things like that, then I dig in a bit longer. But yeah, I mean, typically, and that's just until I push them aside until later on in the process when I have much more time. But I'm trying to, I mean, I hate to come to these events and not have an idea of who is who, because then when you go in one-on-ones, you don't know if this tackle is horrible, which makes Zach Banner, and then you have this defensive end or edge guy who is then just able to run straight around him. And then there's a reason why. It's because he's horrible, right? What's interesting is, for many of these coaches, positional coaches especially, this is their first time, a first exposure to any prospects. And I've heard countless stories of those position coaches falling in love with prospects here because they're the first ones that they watch every single year. Like, I'm sure during this draft process, Terrell Basham's going to be your guy.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to love him throughout the entire thing, and it's because your first exposure here was him.
But,
right?
Yeah.
You know? And it's only natural, and that's exactly what happens, right? So I at least want, like, a baseline of these guys before I head here.
Who's the easiest position? What's the most difficult positions to evaluate?
The further you get away from the football, for me, the more difficult it is. And again, I'm no coach. I don't like to look at technique necessarily or what maybe can be fixed in the NFL, because honestly, more often than not, I think who you are is who you are. And prospects don't change as much as people think they do. Especially, you can't turn a negative into a positive. Ever. Ever, ever. Like, it rarely happens. In fact, I think strengths only get stronger. So what I'm looking for is just figuring out where someone succeeds and if that way of success translates to the NFL. So for me, I think closer to the box. I think offensive linemen, defensive linemen, interior guys, the edge guys, is the easiest to evaluate.
So your first mock, you had the Skins taking the UCLA edge rusher, I think. Does that sound right?
Tack McKinley? Does that sound right?
Yeah. Is that a nickname? I feel like his first name was a lot longer.
Dakarist.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yep, that's it.
I haven't watched him.
Okay.
he was supposed to be here, but he backed out.
Well, Malik McDowell is supposed to be here also, right?
Yeah, he finished the season on the bench with an ankle injury, I believe.
Interesting. I mean, those are the names you hear for the Skins. I think a lot of names are going to change between now and the draft in April.
Right. No, I'm going to keep that one the same the entire time, guys.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. All right, Josh, thank you very much, man. How do folks find you? Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff?
Yeah, Twitter, at Josh Norris. If you want food pictures, my Instagram is at Josh J. Norris.
Are you a cook, or do you go out?
Every time. Every day. Twice a day.
What do you cook?
Breakfast and dinner. Do we have time?
Give us your greatest hits.
So lately, I've been really into sous vide.
Oh, you're one of those. Mitch gets all grumpy about sous vide.
Really?
I do.
Yeah.
Do I?
You don't like the hashtag.
Okay.
Anyway,
go ahead.
So I like to experiment on the weekends. Look, like, I'm stuck inside watching football all day, and so I like to, you know, have a whole leg of lamb that I, you know, cook for the entire 5 pounds, 6 pounds, 18 hours, whatever it is, and... Anyways,
how many meals you get out of a 5 pound leg of lamb?
It's like one day, honestly. I eat a lot of meat.
Jeez.
I eat a lot of meat.
You know what? If you're watching 200 prospects and you're just sitting there snacking on some lamb, it goes quick.
The scene in Norris's apartment is 5 pounds of lamb on the table and
guys,
200
I've got pictures.
Yeah.
And hey, I actually during the draft process last year, I did like Periscopes and Facebook Lives while I was cooking to answer prospect questions and stuff like that. So
that's
I'll
awesome.
Do that again, and check out the Roto-World Football Podcast if I can plug my own.
Yeah. Dude, for sure.
Really enjoy this time of year.
Well, I listen to your podcast it's fantasy focused in season, right?
And we're switching over to draft stuff as we go along now. It's only been out for like a year, and we did that last year as well. So I'll be bringing on some people. I'll probably bring some of y'all on for some team-specific stuff.
Let's do it, man.
We get closer in the process.
Love to do that.
Hey, next time you're going through prospects, you should Facebook Live about cooking.
Got it. Got it.
Give the people what they want.
I will watch.
Okay. I would get in on that, too.
All right.
What's your Super Bowl pick?
Falcons.
Yeah?
I really think the Falcons are going to win. But, man, I'm team... It's funny because I'm not a Panthers fan. I grew up watching the Panthers. If the Panthers did not come to Charlotte, I probably would not be doing this. But I wish my team that I liked and I followed and I watched would take the players that I like, because that's what the Falcons do. Deion Jones, Grady Jarrett, Devontae Freeman, so on and so forth. They drafted all of them. So I honestly think that the Falcons are a bit too much on offense. And with that healthy offensive line, I really don't think, and I know that the Patriots are like first in points against and blah, blah, blah. But if you look at the quarterbacks they faced, they faced like two top 10 quarterbacks all season long, or one or something like that.
But they just held a pretty good offense to.
But it's on the road. It was Ben on the road.
Yeah.
And Ben on the road versus home is drastic splits.
Right.
And it's not like Ben played well down the stretch, guys.
No.
Like his final three games.
He just lit up the Dolphins, so everybody was like, oh, the Steelers can do it.
That's it. So I really do think that the Falcons, as long as their offensive line stays healthy in that single game, it's going to be tough to stop them, definitely.
All right. Josh, thank you very much for coming on. Mitch, these are your final words from Mobile, man. Anything you want to tell the folks?
I already gave the folks the best that I have.
What was it?
It's all going downhill from here.
It's all downhill from here. Eat more Reese's. That's what I go with.
There's
eat more
Reese's. There's some in the back seat right here, by the way.
Believe me.
Yeah, we've eaten a lot of Reese's. We've eaten a 5-pound leg of lamb worth of Reese's. Can we whine a little real quick?
Go ahead.
About our travel tomorrow?
If you want.
Our travel to get home from Mobile is a hour-long drive from Mobile to Pensacola, a 6 a.m. flight out of Pensacola. We then have a 4-hour layover in Nashville, and then Nashville to BWI.
The 4-hour layover in Nashville, though, gives us a chance to go get some hot chicken.
Yeah, my boy Phil Smith is going to pick us up at the airport and take us for hot chicken. So maybe we'll Facebook Live that.
What does our culinary expert back there think of Nashville hot chicken?
I've never had it.
I
know, I want it. I mean,
yeah, you should get in on it.
I've stopped absorbing food content via television because I just don't have time for television. So it's all through
YouTube. Got draft prospects to watch.
I know, it's all through YouTube because obviously I can put on one screen draft breakdown and on the other side, YouTube. And so I've been watching a whole bunch of Nashville hot chicken stuff, and I want to try it. I just never have.
Is that what happened during the UCLA breakdown? You got distracted by something on YouTube?
Something like that, guys. I was in a food coma.
All right. We're going to call it quits here. Thank you guys very much for listening, and stay tuned for the next one.
What Makes You Smile is brought to you by Dominion National. For anyone that needs dental and vision benefits, I have a one-stop shop for you. TeethKeeperSave.com. TeethKeeperSave.com offers dental and vision benefits for everyone with plans starting under $7 a month. Don't have benefits through your employer? Are you self-employed and need dental and vision benefits? TeethKeeperSave.com has various plans for individuals to choose from. Visit TeethKeeperSave.com today and enroll in minutes.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees? Check. Loaner cars and free car washes? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Kia of Alexandria. Let's ride together.